If you're thinking about it, she's talking about it. Join the conversation at 203-333-9422. The Lisa Wexler Show, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show today. Just reiterating the major news story of the day, which is that approximately 1 a.m. this morning, President Trump tweeted that he had tested positive for COVID-19, most likely becoming infected from Hope Hicks, who was on the plane with him and was part of his entourage in the immediate few days immediately preceding this testing. And she is reportedly sick with COVID-19, hopefully not terribly sick. And so he and Melania Trump tested positive. The president reported by the New York Times to have, quote, mild symptoms described as lethargy at a Thursday night event and then falling asleep on a plane. But I would tell you that that could describe anybody after a long day. That doesn't necessarily mean mild symptoms of anything. We will obviously find out in the coming days how the president is doing as the world tries to absorb and digest this news. At 203-333-9422, joining us now is State Senator Will Haskell, a Democrat from the 26th District. He's running for re-election. And we're going to talk a little bit with him right now about some of the policies, the ideas of his campaign, why he wants to be re-elected. And we'll catch up on the most recent news of the special legislative session as well. Will Haskell, hello, and welcome back to the program today. Hi. Good morning.
Hey, Lisa. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Senator Haskell, there's a lot to talk about today. I want to begin with the news that Connecticut towns and cities are poised to mail more than 500,000 absentee ballots today, an unprecedented situation. Even the governor's office saying that there is nothing in Connecticut history to provide any sort of precedent for this election. I saw that over the legislative session, a couple of significant things happened, the special legislative session. This is what I was told, Will, so you tell me if I'm wrong. Number one, that the people who open the absentee ballots can do so, can open the outer envelope 3 days before in order to ascertain whether the absentee ballot is properly, I don't know, labeled, addressed, something like that, right? That's the first thing. And the second thing is that the people counting the ballots, town clerk, registrars, are going to be able to start counting ballots not when the polls close, but rather when the polls open. Is that your understanding as well of the changes this year?
Yeah, that's basically right, Lisa. Let me just start by reacting to the news of the day. I know you led off of it with it, but it's obviously
yes,
very disturbing and troubling to hear that about the president's and the first lady's diagnosis. And for the sake of the country, I just want to say that I hope the president and the first lady and Hope Hicks and the entire staff recover quickly. You know, it's just a stark reminder that this virus can impact anyone, and we've got to remain vigilant here in Connecticut. We've also got to be proactive ahead of this election to make sure that even in the midst of a global pandemic, we can have a well-functioning democracy. So that was one of the important bills that was taken up last night in the Senate. And just to reiterate, in July, we passed a bill that would allow folks to in town halls to begin counting absentee ballots at 6 a.m. on Election Day. Normally, the law in Connecticut is that you begin counting absentee ballots at 8 p.m. when the polls close.
Right.
But given the huge
right.
influx of absentee ballot requests, given the number of people out there, like my grandparents, for example, who don't want to go to a crowded polling place in order to vote on Election Day, we wanted to provide 14 extra hours for those ballots to be counted. But there's a lot of other steps before a ballot is actually counted. Those who will receive their absentee ballots in the coming days will see that there's an outer envelope with their name and with their address. And then there's an inner envelope with where they're actually going to place their ballot. Now, the inner envelope has to be signed. Any inner envelope that isn't signed will result in a ballot that is rejected. So what the legislation that we passed last night allows town clerks and town registrars to do is beginning on, and it's optional, they don't have to do this, but if they want, if they're seeing a huge influx, beginning on Friday, October 30th at 5 p.m., they can start opening outer envelopes. They can't open the inner envelope, and they can't actually count who's gaining votes. They can't actually take a look at the ballot, but they can reject those inner envelopes that haven't been signed. They can create little piles based on legislative districts. They can take a whole bunch of steps that'll just make it a little bit easier for them to begin counting those ballots on Election Day.
Can they call people if the people haven't signed, but based on the return address and knowing who that ballot came from, to say to them, just so you know, your ballot won't be counted? I heard that was the purpose of passing the legislation. Do they have the power to call a voter and say you did it wrong?
It's something I wish was included. While they have the power, they're under no obligation to do so. And it's one of so many things that we have to fix about our election procedures in Connecticut. I was debating the bill last night with one of my more conservative colleagues, and he sort of threw up his hands and said, you know, our election laws are archaic. And I responded, you know, I don't often agree with you, Senator Sampson, but you're right. Instead of throwing up our hands, though, let's roll up our sleeves. Let's bring early voting to Connecticut, as 40 other states, red and blue across the country, already do. Let's allow absentee ballots that are rejected to actually be followed up with the elector to make sure that the ballot is.
Well, I'm hearing that they can be followed up. Well, no, you just said they can be. It's not an imposition. I don't see why you would impose this on a town clerk. You know how much we're already imposing on our local town clerk staff this year? I mean, it's huge.
Well, that's exactly right. There was a big pushback on the notion that town clerks would be required to reach out to those who haven't been signed. They're going to be under a big time crunch. So, of course, a lot of voters, unfortunately, if they don't sign that inner envelope, they're just going to have their ballot rejected, which is why it's so important that between now and November 3rd, we get out the word about how to fill out your absentee ballot correctly. Be sure to sign that inner envelope. If you have questions, reach out to your town clerk or your town registrar. I can promise you, I talked to almost every town I represent yesterday. I called the town hall. They are working overtime to make sure that this election runs smoothly.
I know. They're working so unbelievably hard. It's incredible. So this is very important. So let's just pause and say this. If you're voting by absentee ballot, you have to not only sign your ballot, that's the inside of the envelope, you have to sign the outside of the, quote, inner envelope that then goes into the larger envelope that you mail or place your absentee ballot in at the box behind town hall. So basically, take your time and look for places to sign, and don't skip any where you need it to sign. That's the bottom line.
Absolutely. And also, Lisa, there's one other really important thing that I wanted to mention, and that's that previously, the deadline to rescind your absentee ballot. Let's say you vote absentee, you submit your ballot, but then you decide, you know what, I changed my mind or something, I'd like to vote in person.
A lot of people.
Previously, you could show up until 10 a.m. on Election Day at town hall, and you could ask the clerk to pull out your absentee ballot. There is a new deadline now, and it is Friday, October 30th at 5 p.m.
So, that's huge news.
Right. If you vote absentee and you want to pull your ballot, then you've got to do so Friday, October 30th at 5 p.m. We're going to be working to get out the word.
That's big news. I'm going to have to repeat that a million times. Okay. So that's very important news. Yeah, because usually you could just go and say, forget about it, take my ballot back. As long as I don't vote twice, I want to vote in person. So now, if you vote by absentee ballot and you don't show up to ask for that ballot to be rescinded by that Friday, October 30th, then don't show up at the polls, because they're going to know that you voted and they're not going to let you vote. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly correct.
Okay. Yeah. And that's because there's just going to be so many of them. They have to get organized, I bet. Wow. Okay, dramatic sea changes. I want to ask you about something else, Will Haskell. There's so much to talk about. 203-333-9422. We're on the air with State Senator Will Haskell. And feel free to call him, ask him a question, comment. He represents the 26th District, which are seven towns in Fairfield County, possibly one of yours. Senator Haskell, there are three bills, I believe one in the Senate and two in the House, that have with them the public policy of equating discriminatory housing practices with zoning and discrimination in terms of racial disparity of outcome of who lives in a town with zoning. You may already have heard that there is a test case being brought up via Yale Law School in Woodbridge to try and destroy their single-family residential zoning on the ground that it's a civil rights violation. And my question for you is, are you going to vote for a bill, if it comes before you, that takes away local control over zoning, that eliminates character from consideration? These are currently pending bills, in order to give a more regionalized control to zoning and to housing. Where do you stand,
Lisa,
on that?
I'm glad you asked. So the bills that are floating out there, they're really just drafts. They will not be called for a vote anytime soon in Hartford. We were in the Senate until pretty late last night, but it was pretty widely agreed that that will be the last special session before the election. So we are not going to be reconvening in Hartford anytime soon to consider zoning proposals. But let me tell you where I stand on it if it comes up and if I have a chance to continue serving this district even after the election. My belief is, of course, we need more diversity in housing options here in Connecticut, and especially in the suburbs of Fairfield County. It's too difficult for teachers and police officers and firefighters and seniors and young people to afford to live in the same community in which they work. And that's not just a problem in terms of being an inclusive and welcoming and diverse community. It's also a problem when it comes to the economic development of our region. That being said, I'm also a big believer in local zoning control, and I happen to believe that those two things are not contradictory. I think the best people who can roll up their sleeves and make Westport more affordable and more welcoming to the next generation of workers and to the seniors who have built their lives here but might want to downsize, I think it's the volunteers who are on the Westport Planning and Zoning Commission. So to the extent the state can provide a toolkit to make it happen, perhaps some incentives to make transit-oriented development a reality around local train lines, some training courses to those who do step up and volunteer but might not have professional expertise, I think that that's fine. But I do not believe that Hartford needs to get involved in every situation in order to make our communities more affordable. And by the way, look no further than my hometown in Westport, which right now, I'll be the first to tell you, I had a lot of trouble as a 22-year-old finding a place to live that was an apartment that I could afford in Westport. But I've had a lot of conversations with the folks on the Planning and Zoning Commission. They're pursuing accessory dwelling units as a right. They are looking to eliminate the arbitrary cap on multifamily zoning. So I think that Westport's taken a lot of positive steps. They're being proactive. I know that that's true of a lot of towns across the 26th district. And I'm just a staunch believer in the fact that we can build more inclusive and more affordable communities while at the same time supporting local control.
Okay. We're chatting with State Senator Will Haskell, 203-333-9422, 203-333-9422, because it's very much a bottom-up and top-down agenda. There is a group called Desegregate Connecticut. There is, as I said, this lawsuit coming up from the bottom, and there definitely is a legislative push from above that would put an overlay of law that judges would then be required to interpret and implement. So it's interesting.
Hey, Lisa, could I bring up one issue that I know is important to you and that we've talked about before on the show?
Sure.
I wanted to follow up and let your listeners know that the Take Back Our Grid Act finally passed in the Senate last night.
Yeah,
you and I have spoken a lot about Eversource and our failure as a state to hold that public utility accountable to the public.
Yes.
Well, finally, I know it's been a while since that tropical storm and some folks were looking for more immediate action, but we finally passed a bill that moves Connecticut towards a performance-based regulatory system. So what that means is PURA, the Public Utilities Regulatory Authority, is going to have the power to look at things like, well, is Eversource investing in customer service? Are they burying power lines and making sure to harden their grid? Do they have an appropriate number of on-the-ground Connecticut line workers? How much are they compensating their CEO? And as a result, when Eversource comes and requests a certain rate, PURA can take all of these things into account and base their level of profit largely on their performance in serving our community. So I think that this is going to move us towards a grid that is both more affordable but also more reliable. I know some folks were looking for dramatic action. They were looking to kick Eversource out of Connecticut. This bill is more of a compromise, but I think it finally moves us in the right direction.
We're chatting with State Senator Will Haskell at 203-333-9422. If you want to ask a question or a comment about this, there was some pushback. I don't know if you had a chance to read Dan Haar's column yesterday. He's a pretty liberal guy, and he thought that the bill was pushed through a little too quickly because he was concerned that Eversource's warning that it would backfire on us as consumers was something that should have been taken seriously. What do you think about their threat that given the passage of this bill, it's only going to increase our utility rates?
So I really like Dan a lot, and I did read his column. I've heard from folks that the bill was rushed, and I've heard from other folks who said, what took you so long? This should have been passed weeks ago, and it probably should have been passed decades ago. Look, Eversource plays ball in other states where they have performance-based regulatory structures. If you look at the outage map as that tropical storm moved through New England, of course, outages followed the storm, but they lingered in Connecticut. Eversource has prioritized other states that do a better job of holding their feet to the fire. Of course, the lobbyists who work for Eversource every day at the state capitol are going to threaten to increase rates. But right now, my constituents are paying so much for energy, and they're not seeing anything in return. So what are we getting for this increased investment? I don't think it's unreasonable to financially incentivize Eversource to do a little bit better. And that's exactly what this bill does. One thing I didn't mention, Lisa, is if you're out of power for more than 96 hours, it's going to require compensation for any food and medication that you've lost. And that's a critical feature.
I thought it was $250 off of your bill automatically. No, you have to show food and medicine. I thought it was like $250.
It's a $25 account credit for every day that you're experiencing an outage. But if you also suffer damages for food and medication that's lost after 96 hours, then you can also seek compensation from the company. This isn't retroactive. So those, I know a lot of my constituents stocked up on stuff because of coronavirus. They had a packed fridge and a lot of that food went bad. And my heart breaks for them. This bill, unfortunately, it doesn't make it retroactive, but this won't be the last storm. We live in New England. We know that we're going to experience outages in the future. And this will make sure that our community is a little bit more prepared for that crisis.
One of the things, Senator Haskell, I wanted you to look into, this I heard from some of my listeners, was that when they had switched to solar, that their Eversource servicing bill went way higher, which was not what they expected. And you know that Eversource has been one of the few people to lobby in Hartford against the expansion of solar credits because they view it as a threat to their, you know, monopolization of energy. Mm-hmm. And it strikes me, though, that we still have to use their wires. And I was very perturbed by this. I'm thinking myself of looking into getting solar, but I could see how easily Eversource could disincentivize that by jacking up the rates to use their wires. I would really like you to look into that.
I will continue looking into that. And you're right that Eversource has been the greatest problem here. Representative Jonathan Steinberg, who represents Westport, has been a champion for way longer than I have for solar energy. But just look at the numbers. Not only is it, of course, good for the environment and that it reduces carbon emissions, it is also a huge financial benefit to towns that want to participate in the virtual net metering program. It brings down energy costs. And while other states have aggressively pursued solar power, Connecticut has capped projects. There are dozens of towns that are actually in line waiting to participate in the virtual net metering program. I represent a bunch of those towns, and Republican and Democratic municipal leaders tell me that this would allow them to save money. So I know I've said this before to
but
you,
but just
Lisa,
look into
maybe
it, because for people
there,
that, well, just exactly, because people that have switched over to solar are now complaining that their bill is higher than they were led to expect if they're an Eversource customer. So I think we have to look into that because we know that this is a company that will gouge us any way they can. And they might say, well, if we're no longer your energy provider, then we have the right to charge you more for the lines. Do you see what I'm saying? So I would like you to look into this.
Absolutely.
I have another. Okay. I've got something from a listener who called into the show who didn't want to get on air but would like you to once again repeat before you go off air, once again slowly, what is the methodology for absentee ballots? How do we have our absentee ballot count? Slowly, carefully, clearly, what are the rules? And the returning, sorry to me, and the October 30th and the return as well. Okay, because these are changes. People want to know. Go ahead.
You got it. Slow me down, Lisa, if I'm going too fast. But a few weeks ago, you were, if you're registered to vote in Connecticut, you were probably mailed an absentee ballot application from the Secretary of State. If you haven't returned that yet, if it's sitting on your kitchen counter, I would encourage you to do so right away. The postage is prepaid, and it's called an application, but of course that's sort of a misnomer because everyone this year is eligible for an absentee ballot. If you threw it out, if you didn't notice it, if you didn't receive one, it's totally okay. You can always download an application from the Secretary of State's website. I don't have that in front of me, but if you go to willhaskell.com/vote, there's all the information you need about downloading that application. Now, starting today, absentee ballots themselves will be mailed out to those who requested one. It's not too late to request one, but today is when the first batch is sent out. You've got to turn in that absentee ballot by 8 p.m. on Election Day. You can do that by putting it through the U.S. Postal Service, or if you're worried about the Postal Service, you can drop off the ballot in one of the secure drop boxes outside of every single town hall. Now, here's the change that was implemented last night that Lisa and I were talking about at the top of the show. If you vote absentee, but then you change your mind and you decide that you'd like to vote in person instead, you have until Friday, October 30th at 5 p.m. to go to your town hall and to speak with the town clerk and to rescind your ballot. After that, your ballot may have already been processed, so it's too late to then vote in person and to pull your absentee ballot. I think that covers all the information, but one critical piece that I didn't mention earlier is that if you're voting absentee, but you're nervous about making sure your vote counts in this critical election, know that you can always visit the Secretary of State's website to confirm that your absentee ballot was received and
counted.
Oh, that's
right. You can track it. You can track your ballot. That's a new feature. That's right.
That's exactly right. So for more information about that, just visit willhaskell.com/vote. It's all there. It's on the Secretary of State's website as well. We are doing everything we can to make sure that this election runs smoothly in Connecticut.
So bottom line for me, my two takeaways, there are several, but the two important takeaways are if you've mailed in your absentee ballot, but you want to change your mind, you've got to go to your town hall and you've got to tell them no later than October 30th that you don't want them to open your absentee ballot, but that you'd rather vote in person on Election Day. That's numero uno. And number two, very importantly, if you're going to vote for by absentee ballot, not only do you have to sign your ballot, but you have to sign the envelope you put the ballot in, which is called the inner envelope, which then gets put into a larger envelope and then dropped off or sent to town hall. So don't forget to sign where you need to sign, because if you haven't signed in all the places you're supposed to sign, your vote won't count. And that's really
good
important.
Point.
You're going through all this effort to have your vote to count. Senator Will Haskell, thank you very much for joining us. Good luck with the campaign in November. Thanks for giving us all this timely information. Once again, your website?
WillHaskell.com, and thank you so much for having me, Lisa. Always great to join the conversation.
Always a pleasure. Thank you so much for being here. It's the Lisa Wexler Show. We'll be right back.